Good morning, everyone. Hope you have a wonderful day. Continue. We left off. We are in the first chapter of Bava Metzia, 7a. The third line from the top. We dedicate this class to our brothers and sisters of the Holy Land, especially those on the front line. May all the wounded have a full and speedy recovery. May all the hostages return home safely to their families. And the nishmas of Dav Nachum, that Moshe, for shleim of Peder Bas Miriam. Look, they're looking at what I'm going to do. Yesterday we learned the Braisa, that if a person has animals which are suffic, which are in doubt, you can send them back to the, they can be included in the flock to count 10 to tie it. The question is, what do you mean doubt? What do you mean that animals are in doubt? My sveikas, ilayim is suffic b'chayidus. If you're going to say, we're not sure if they're firstborn or not, you can't say that. Why not? Because ye kedush amarachmana. The Leishu Kwa Kedush says, a city, the 10th one, you count 10 sheep, 10 animals, and the 10th one is holy. The 10th one is holy. But if it's a b'chayir, then it was already holy. It's born holy. So we're talking about, you take a regular animal, you make it holy by counting 10 and making a red mark on the 10th and designating it as a sacrifice, you make it holy. But if it's a bechor, then it's already holy. So since it's in doubt, so you can't send it into the flock. You can't count it as one of the 10. So if it's a doubt, I can't send it into the 10. I have to can't do it. Definitely not holy, and I'm making then the 10th. I'm not holy. Exactly. Ella, the mother says, Ella, suffic pidin petach hamor. It's a doubt whether a hamor, the firstborn, I'm not sure if it is a firstborn or not, because it was a miscarriage before. I'm not sure if the miscarriage qualifies as an offspring. So, if not, if this firstborn donkey is, so then you have to exchange it for a lamb. There's no holiness involved. You just have to exchange it. Otherwise, you have to break the neck of the firstborn donkey. And once you exchange it, then it's yours. You can use it for whatever you want. So it's a doubt. I'm not sure whether I needed to exchange it or not. And even if you exchange it, even if it was definite, you would have to separate, you would have to tithe. So Rav Nachman said, Yisrael, he has 10 such sheep who were substituted for a donkey, a firstborn donkey, which you're in doubt if it's a firstborn or not. You get to keep it, you don't have to give it to the Kohen, but you have to tithe it. Because even if you would exchange it, it's not holy. You give it to the Kohen, he can use it for whatever he wants. There's no holiness involved. You don't have to offer it as a sacrifice or anything. Have a lot of masusa, getting back to the bathhouse that was owned by two. And they argued, two were fighting over it. This one says it belongs to me, this one says it doesn't belong to me. And one of them sanctified it, gave it to the temple treasury, donated it. So we had some rabbis refuse to use it from that point on. And some rabbis continue to use it. So what's the halacha? Who's right? If the one who grabs it, if he can grab it, and then you say it belongs to him, then he has ownership in it, and he has a right to sanctify it. If sanctifying it is like grabbing it, it's the same as grabbing it, and if you grab it, it belongs to you. So what's the bottom line? What is the conclusion? We can't bring any proof one way or the other. So yesterday we refuted the proof. We tried to bring a proof that grabbing is like sanctifying is the equivalent of grabbing. But he refuted the proof. So what remains? What's the halacha? My habilah, masusas. Tashma, bring your proof. There was an episode. There was an incident. He went to ask Rav Huna. Pashta. And Rav Huna, it was a similar episode. And he brought a proof. Rav Nachman called Momin. any money that the owner cannot extract it
through a court proceeding.
Through a court proceeding.
Right.
He can't prove it's definitely certifiably his. Because he has no proof, he has no witnesses. He also can't sanctify it because it's not in his possession. If you can't prove it in the court that it's yours, if you can't extract it, if someone grabs it from you, you can't extract it, then it's not in your possession. Even if it's yours, it's not in your possession. And therefore, you can't sanctify it. You don't have the right to sanctify
it. Your neighbor's maser, you can't take your neighbor's produce and say it's maser, right?
Or the same would apply in the case of the bathhouse.
Right.
These two are fighting over it, since neither of them could extract it from the other in the court of law. Whoever grabs it, it's his. So therefore, if you have no right to sanctify it, it means nothing. It's not in your possession to sanctify it. The Gemara asks, but so what we can deduct from this? If he could extract it with in court, he has witnesses that it's his. Yigdishu kaddish. Then you're saying that he does have the power to sanctify it. Avgad le'apke, even before he actually goes through the court proceedings, you're saying it's considered in his possession. How can you say that? Rabbi Yechon said, "Gozav l'nisyashu abaylim." Someone steals, and if the owner did not render it ownerless, he didn't get the spear. Shneim enichin like this. Neither of them could sanctify. Not the thief. Zel ufidenishal, because it's not his. And the owner of Azel, even though it's his, it's not in his possessions, even though it's his. And he can extract it in a court of law because it's his. The other one is not arguing, the other one just stole it from him. And nevertheless, since it's not in his possession, he can't extract it. So what are you saying? What's Rav Nachman saying? That any money that you can't extract in the court proceeding, you can't sanctify it. What are you saying? If he could extract in the court proceeding, you could sanctify it? Rabbi Yechon says no. Even if he could extract in the court proceeding, like the owner could extract it from the thief, but until he extracts it, it's not in his possession and he cannot sanctify it. The Gemara answers, "Mi sabrish masusa metalton askinon." You think we're talking about a movable item? Masusa makarge askinon. It's real estate. It's a bathhouse that's connected to the ground. Ground can never be earth, ground, property can never be stolen, can never leave your domain, can never leave your possession. So the fact that you can extract it, so that's the criteria. If I can extract it with a court proceeding judiciously, then it's considered, the property is considered in my possession, and therefore I could sanctify it. Versus if I can't extract it, I can't prove it, it's mine, I can't sanctify it. The movable items, even if you could extract it, even if you have witnesses, it's yours. Someone stole it from you. It doesn't matter. Since it's not in your possession, like Rabbi Yechon says, you cannot sanctify it. So Metalton will be the mikveh that you showed me. It's above ground. It's not part of the ground. Tana, we learn. Rabbi Khalifa was from Israel, from the west. He learned, Kameh, the Rabbi Avot. He taught this braise, he learned this braise before Rav Avuah. It says, Shnai Madukim Metalis. Two are holding on to a cloak, to a garment. Zen Neitl, Vashiyad Magaz, Neitl, Vashiyad Magaz, Vasharchet, Moshav. Whatever they're holding on to, they don't divide. Whatever they're actually grasping, they're holding. Exactly, that's yours. The rest in between, that they divide. Like it says now, Mishnah, he's clarifying what our Mishnah means. Machvile Rav Avuah showed him. He says, like he showed him, you have to add something. Don't forget. You don't just divide it. You have to swear that you don't have less than the half that they're dividing. Our mission doesn't say that. Our mission says you divide it. You split it down the middle. Our mission doesn't say that you keep it. You keep what you're holding. You keep holding. So how is it possible you can split the whole garment 50-50? He's holding something that they get to keep. How can you find you can split it down, they're holding on to it, and you split it 50-50? They're holding on to the strings, the threads at the hem, at the seam, at the bottom. So you're not really holding on to the garment. They're holding on to the threads on the bottom of the garment. So therefore, in that case, you split the entire garment 50-50. But if they're holding on to the garment, the braisa clarifies. The braisa is always a little more detailed and more specific. If you're holding on, whatever you're holding on to, that's yours, and the rest you divide. Amram Sharshia Shmamina, from this we learn Hai Sud. This piece of cloth. Kivan, the top is Bash Sholish. Al Sholish, we're holding on three fingers. The width of three fingers, of three thumbs. A tefach is four thumbs. Four thumbs. So this is three quarters of a tefach. Sholosh is boy. Sholosh is boy. Right? It's two, a little more than two inches. So if you're holding on to it, 3 inches and 3 inches, we say that it's called a kinyan suder. It's one of the kinyan, and one of the ways to acquire is I give you my handkerchief, and in exchange you're giving me whatever you're selling me or giving me, and I acquire it. So if he doesn't have to hold the whole handkerchief. The moment he grabs hold of three width of a thumb, then it's considered as if he hold on to the whole thing, and then you acquire, it's a good acquisition. It's an exchange. I'm giving you my handkerchief, and in exchange you're giving me a cow, I don't know, whatever, you're selling me. So the moment I grab hold of three inches, the width of three fingers, then it's considered as if I've taken hold of the handkerchief. It's a kinyan.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, without this braise, I would think you have to hold the entire handkerchief. You have to hold on to the whole entire handkerchief. So that's what he says. No, you hold on just a partial part of it. It's enough. Why is this different than what Rav Chisda said? Rav Chisda says, get biyada, mashicha biyada. If he gives her the get, right? The husband gives his wife a divorce, a bill of divorce. But it's attached to a string, and he's still holding on to the string. If he can pull the divorce document to him, she's not divorced. Im lav, and if not, then mugudeshes. Because he didn't give her. So what do we see from here? That even though she's holding on to the get, since he can take it away from her, it's as if she's not holding on to it. So the same thing over here. Why do you say whatever you're grabbing onto is yours, whatever you're grasping is yours? Why? Since the other one could schlep it away. So it shouldn't be considered as if you're grasping anything. So you should just divide the whole thing down the middle. It doesn't matter if you're holding on to 10 inches and holding on to an inch. The whole garment should be divided. The Gemara answers, no, there's different. Hasam, there, Kedis has been. Yeah, the Taita says you have to write to get Kedis. It has to be a cut, clean cut, a total separation.
If the string breaks off the document.
Veleka, no, if you're holding on, if the string's attached.
Right.
If you're writing a divorce and the string's attached, here literally I can pull it away. There's no severance. It has to be a total severance. Right. Hach over here in the Sinabin, here this is Vinasan. Place in this, give to your friend, you give him a handkerchief or something. So I gave him, Ba'ika, the fact that he's holding on to the width of three fingers, it's enough. It's considered holding on. Amar Rabbi said, Imois a talis musheves chelkin. If it's a golden talis, you divide it in half. Obviously, whatever they're holding, what difference does it make? You divide it in half. Well, we all need this. So the gold is in the middle. So he's saying, even though the gold is in the middle, you divide it. Obviously, you divide it. You divide the whole talis, including you divide the gold. Well, we don't need this. Most of the gold is on one side. So I would say, divide the talis to the width. So therefore, I'll get one of them. We'll get the one that's holding this side. We'll get most of the gold.
Yeah,
the gold is on my side. So let's divide him the width. So that's what he says. Why do you have to divide him the width? Divide it in the length. So we'll both get equal amount of gold. The rabbis learn. What if both the lender and the borrower are holding on to the document, the loan document? Malva Amar, the lender says Shaliyu, it's mine. I never collected on it. You owe me. But not for many, it fell from me. Matasav and I found it. Love Leivam, and the borrower says no. Shalchahu. It was yours, but I paid you. I'm not arguing. It's not a false document. It's a real document. And I paid you. And you returned me, and I gave you the shtar, and you returned me the document. That's like a receipt. You gave me back the loan document. And I found it. And it fell from me. I lost it, and I found it. So the law says, you have to authenticate the document. The witnesses that signed the document should authenticate the signature that they did. And once you authenticate the document, then we say it's probably a legal document. It's a loan. It's a document of that. And therefore, the lender could collect with it. That's the opinion of Rebbe. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, his father, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, his great grandfather says no yachleiku. You split it down the middle. You only have to pay half. Because I don't know, since they're both holding on to it. So the father. Rebbe argues in his father. We find many times the fathers and the sons disagree. In Torah, you have to, when a rabbi gives a verdict, it has to make sense to you. Just because my father said differently, my father and my teacher, if it doesn't make sense to me, it doesn't make sense to me, and I say differently. So you can't argue with your father in front of his faith. That's disrespectful. But to argue with your father in halacha, if I'm halachic authority, with all due respect, I'm sorry, I disagree. But the question is, it's strange. First he quotes Rebbe's opinion. First he quotes the son, and then he quotes his father's opinion. Shouldn't it make sense? First you quote the father, and then you quote the son. Okay, so that's the argument. So what's the argument? So the master says, and the lender collects the whole thing. But our mission says, two people come before the court, they're both holding on to it, we say you split it down the middle. Why is this any different? Rebbe is arguing in our Mishnah, Rebbe is the author of the Mishnah. So Amar Rav Nachman, so Rav said the name of Nachman, he explained the argument as follows. If you authenticate the document, everyone holds you split it down the middle. Keep pligi, when are they arguing? B'shein the Mekuyim. If you don't authenticate the document. Rebbe Sevim made the B'shtar Shekotzvu, Tzarev Lekaimei. In other words, the borrower in this case is admitting. He's not arguing it's a forged document. He says, yes, it's an authentic document. And indeed, you lend me money, and we wrote this document, but I paid you, and you gave it back to me as a receipt, and I lost it, and I found it. So since he admits that it's an authentic, that it's a real document, nevertheless, you have to authenticate. Unless you authenticate it, then he can argue I paid. Because he could have said the whole document is a forgery. The borrower is in a position of strength. If he's lying, if he's trying to lie, he could have just said, deny the whole document is a forgery. He doesn't. So he must be telling the truth. He's saying it's a real document, I owed you money, but I paid you. So we believe him, unless you authenticate the document. So if he authenticates the document, then we split it down the middle, and then the borrower has to pay the lender half of the loan. But if he does, if you don't authenticate the document, and the borrower claims, I lost it, I paid you already, then you don't divide it. He doesn't have to pay a dime. My timer.
If he paid, wouldn't he have a receipt of some sort?
That is the receipt. The return document. The lender gave the document, so he can no longer collect with from it. So he gave it to the borrower. Now he lost it, and then he found it. So my time was chas v'balmu. It's a worthless piece of paper. You can't collect it. Because he could have said that the whole document is garbage, is a forgery. So if he says he paid, you have to believe him. Manka mashal ishtar. The only reason we look at this document as a real document is because of him. Halayva, the loiva is the one who authenticates the document. So if you trust the loiva, he says it was paid. That's the opinion of Rebbe. He says no. Since once the borrower agrees that the document is authentic, he can no longer claim it was paid. Because if it's paid, why is the lender have the document? If you already paid the document, you would rip it up. You would pay him, take the document out of his hand. What, you want him to collect again and again and again from you? So it's as if you, once you're admitting that you authenticated it. So therefore, I've got even if you don't authenticate it, just the fact that the borrower admits, he would have to pay, and he can no longer argue that it's paid. So they're both holding on to it. Each one has a claim. So you split it down the middle, so he only has to pay half. Yet, biblically, a key element is that biblically, the document, you don't need authentication. If I see a document with two witnesses, I assume it's kosher. And you can collect it. You can't argue it's forgery. We don't even pay attention. Prove that it's forged. You have to prove that it's forged. So biblically, really, you can collect on this document. So the moment, if you claim it's forged, the rabbi said, if you claim it's forged, then you need to authenticate. He's not claiming it's forged. He's admitting that it's true. And biblically, even if he would claim it's forged, he wouldn't even pay attention. So therefore, once he admits, so we don't say, well, if he's a liar, he could have said it's forged, and therefore we have to believe him when he says he's paid. No. You authenticated the document. Biblically, even if he claimed it's forged, it wouldn't mean anything. So therefore, you have to pay. But in this case, they're both holding on to it, and you're claiming that you did pay, and he returned the document, and you lost it, and you found it. Fine, so you split it down the middle. That's Rav Shimon Gamliel's opinion. Okay, that's the Braisa. This is Nafa. We learned the Braisa. Nafa. We learned the Braisa. What if Nafali Adadaya? If the judge is walking down the street and he gets the document, Nafali Adadaya. Once he gets the document, let's see, Lamas. In other words, the simple reading is that the Dayan was walking down the street and he finds a loan document. So he keeps it, he doesn't give it to anyone. So Gemara asks, Maishno. What difference does it make if the Dayan found it or someone else found it? What difference does it make? Rav explains, this is what the Braisa means. Another person, a third party, who's not the borrower, who's not the lender, there's no connection. He found the document that fell. It was lost. He found it in the street. Liadayan, he found that it already came to the Dayan. Vechidami, how is this? The Kosebe Hempik, the court authenticated the document. They stamped it and they said, we've authenticated the signatures. And he finds this document. He finds a loan document that had a Hempik, that had the authentication of the judges. And this third party, who's neither the lender or the borrower, finds this document. So he says, Lo Yitziyu, the one who found it keeps it. Lo Yitziyu Elamas. Until Eliyahu HaNavi comes, or until you have witnesses who testify who lost it, and the borrower and the lender are arguing. The lender says, hey, you found it, it was mine. I never collected on it. The borrower says, no, what are you talking about? I paid and you gave it back to me. That's the receipt, so you can never collect it again, and then I lost it. So therefore, the third party doesn't leave his hands. Until Eliyahu HaNavi comes and clarifies what happens, or until witnesses come and testify who lost it. Not only in the case if there's no hempik, if there's no authentication, we can say there it's easy. You can say, of course he gets to keep it. He shouldn't release it. He shouldn't release his document. Maybe the lender wrote a document, a loan document, but he never lent. He was planning to lend, and he wrote up this whole document, but he never gave him money. So, of course, he can't give it to the lender. Why is he going to collect? There was never any loan here. You just had a document prepared, because in case you were going to lend, or you decided to lend, and then you change your mind. So, of course, you don't release it. But that goes without saying. Even if there's a hempik, the makuyim that you authenticated. So, obviously, the loan actually happened. You're authenticating it. There was a loan. It's real. Nevertheless, you still know. You don't give it back to the lender because maybe the borrower is right. Maybe the borrower paid the loan and you return the loan document so the lender can't collect twice. That's like a receipt. Here, do whatever you want with it. Tear it up. And I lost it and he found it. So How can I give it to the lender? How can I collect it a second time? So therefore, you keep it. Rabbi Yossi Amar, Rabbi Yossi says in the Braisa, that the document is, we assume that the document was never collected. We don't worry that maybe it was paid. Why? Because Rabbi Yossi holds that if you paid, right, if the borrower's story is true, that he paid the loan, and the lender, he asked for the document back. Give me back the document. I don't want you to collect again, second time. Double dibs. But what would you do? What would you do if you were the borrower? What would you do if the moment he hands you back the document? What would you do? You would rip it up. I should keep it around. Maybe I'll lose it, and maybe he'll find it and he'll collect again. Just burn it, rip it up, throw it in the garbage.
A mortgage is a burning ceremony.
Yeah, exactly. Burn the mortgage. So, yes, yeah. So you burn it up. What do you? You don't have to worry that it was paid.
Did you literally burn it?
No. Yes, Lechayesh Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi does not worry that maybe it was paid, and he says you returned the document to the lender. But if you find, no one. Lechayesh Rabbi Yossi. You're saying Rabbi Yossi doesn't say we suspect that maybe it was paid up. Because he would have ripped it up, the borrower would have ripped it up right away. What do you mean? But Tani will learn the price. And Matustak Suva Bashut. If you found a ksuva in the market, a person finds a ksuva. It's not him, not the husband, not the wife, a third party finds a ksuva. If there was a man Shabal Moida, if the husband agrees that he never paid the ksuva, Yachzer Lishta, then he will give it to the wife. Ain't a Baal Moida, the Baal says, no, I paid my wife the ksuva, she gave me back the ksuva as a receipt that she can't collect the second time, you know, double dipping. How could he return it? He can't give it to the woman. Loyla Zevelos, and not to the woman, not to the husband.
Right.
Rabbi Yossi says, the tachas by law. If he didn't divorce her, yachzir liisha, he gives it to a woman. Because it doesn't make sense. No one's going to give a ksuva. No one's going to pay a ksuva before the divorce. So if they're still married, surely it belongs to the wife. This Armalov, she's a widow in his garsha divorce. Leyasa, you can't return to either of them. Maybe he paid her already. So what do we see? Rabbi Yosef says, we are worried maybe he paid. We don't say, well, if the husband paid and the wife returned the ksuva to him, he would have ripped it up right away. So what do you mean? He collected the ksuva and then he lost it? Doesn't make any sense. Well, you see, Rabbi Yosef does say, no, maybe he didn't have a chance to rip it up. He was going to put it in his collector's item. I don't know why, whatever. And he lost it. So we hear the same thing. Why does Rabbi Yossi say that Mechuskasi, you return the document, the loan document to the lender? Why? Maybe we should be suspicious. Maybe it was paid up. Your mother says, Ape, you have to turn around the opinion. Nafali, Adayin, Leitzi, Elam, Rabbi Yossi is the one who says that you don't give it to the lender or to the borrower because maybe the borrower already paid, maybe it was already paid up. The rabbis argue, just like over there, the rabbis argue with Rabbi Yossi. The rabbis say, you don't give it to any. The rabbis say, and you give it to the husband. Just like over there, the rabbis say, the ksuva, you give to the husband. I'm sorry, you give the ksuva to the wife.
She's still in the house. She never paid.
The rabbis say, if the husband argues and he says that he paid, so you don't, and you don't give it. You don't give it to her. You don't give it to the woman. If you don't return it to the wife, that means that you believe the husband that he already paid.
So one second.
So over here, but still doesn't answer the question. Because if you can say it's the rabbis, you're saying that the rabbis hold here that you return the document to the lender. But here, the rabbi said, "Ksuva, you don't return to anyone. You don't return to the husband. You don't return to the wife. Till right, or till someone brings witnesses who lost the document." But you're saying here, the rabbis say that you return it. You do return it to the lender. You can collect on it again. So you should return it to the wife, that she should be able to collect on it. You're saying that you don't suspect that it was paid, because if it was paid already, if the wife paid and she gave back the ksuva to her husband, he would have ripped it up. So the fact that it's still here proves that it was never collected on, that it was never paid. So the rabbi should say you should give it to the wife. So it's a contradiction of the rabbis and the rabbis. That's the case, kasha the rabbanon and the rabbanon. You answered Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi is consistent, but the rabbis are inconsistent. It's a contradiction. So the Gemara answers, "Shtar ksuva kule Rabbi Yossi." The Braisa ksuva is all Rabbi Yossi's words. Suri mechz. It's missing words. This is what the Braisa says. In a balma, if the husband doesn't admit, he argues that it was paid. If he argues that it was never paid, of course he give it to the wife. There's no question. There's no argument. Everyone says the wife should get it. But if the husband says, no, he doesn't admit, he says, I already paid the ksuva, my wife gave me back the ksuva. Why? You don't give it back. You don't give it to anyone. Mamed, when do we say this? In this armelish, in this garja, if she's divorced, if she's widowed, she's widowed or divorced, then we can't give it back to either of them. Because maybe he did pay. Maybe it was paid, and he didn't rip it up. But if he's still living with her husband, he's still married, then of course he give it to the woman. We don't suspect that he paid a ksuva without divorcing her. Who pays a ksuva before the divorce, before he's obligated to pay? If she's still married, you give the ksuva, there's no question that you give it to the woman. But if she's widowed, the divorce, you can't give it to either of them, because maybe it was paid, maybe not, we don't know. So you leave it till the yonah becomes, until one of them produces witnesses. And the rabbis, of course, hold in both cases that you would give it back to the woman. You give the ksuva back to the woman. Just look over here, he says you give it back to the lender. Because we assume, since the ksuva is still intact, it wasn't ripped up, it was not paid.
Right.
Okay. Rapapa answers, Leilun Leitapa. You don't have to switch around. It's very, it's not smooth to say they all made a mistake. They got the names wrong. They mixed up the opinions. No. Leilun Leitapa. But Rabbi Yossi, then Rabbanu come. Rabbi Yossi is saying, according to the rabbis, Lididi, according to me, Afilnas Armel and Sgarishin, Amalichin. Even if she's a widow to divorce, you don't worry, you don't suspect that it was paid. And you give the ksuva back to the woman, just like he holds over here, you give the document, the loan document to the lender. You're not worried that maybe it was paid up. If it was paid up, then the borrower would have ripped it up right away, wouldn't have kept it around. But even according to you, that you hold, no, maybe the borrower didn't rip it up. And maybe you have to suspect that it was paid. But idly me is, at least you would agree with me in a case. That if she's still married, then for sure you would agree that you give it to the woman. To me, you always give it back to the woman. But according to you, you don't give it to the woman, because I don't know. Maybe you already paid it. Maybe the husband is right. Maybe it was already paid. But in the case where she's still married, even you would agree with me that the husband can't say he paid already the ksuva. You don't pay attention to it. Who pays the ksuva? Who pays the ksuva before you're obligated when she's still married? And the rabbi said, no, we disagree even in that case. Why? The maybe he gave her money. He says, if in the case we get divorced, in a case you become a widow, you'll collect the ksuva from here, have it in your pocket. You don't have to worry, you don't have to come collecting, and who knows, maybe I'll lose everything by the time, maybe in the divorce proceedings I'll lose everything. Here you have your money in your pocket, no matter what happens, you're safe. So maybe he did pay. So we have no reason to believe her over him. If in this case you wouldn't either give it to the woman. A third answer, Ravina says, Leilam Epech Kamais. Turn around the first Barais. Rabbi Yossi is the one who says maybe it was paid and you don't give it to the lender or to the borrower. The rabbis say, no, give it to the lender. Surely it was not paid. If it was paid, the borrower would have ripped it up. timeless. And then if that's the case, why then the rabbis, why over here do the rabbis say that don't give the woman the ksuvah? If the rabbis over there hold maybe he did pay.
Maybe he did prepay. He gave her lots of valuables that they should divorce.
Right. If the rabbis say you don't suspect that he paid because he would have ripped it off, so why don't they give the ksuvah to the woman? Why don't they say the same thing? That maybe, how could you say that the ksuvah was paid? If the ksuvah was paid and the woman gave it back to the husband, he would have ripped it up immediately. So the fact is, the ksuvah tells me he never paid. And why do the rabbis say that you don't give it back to the woman? The reason is, because we're worried, maybe he wrote two ksuvahs. In other words, she lost the ksuvah, right? He can't live with a husband without a ksuvah. So he writes her another ksuvah. And the husband, what does the husband argue? The husband, not that he's arguing and he says, I paid. They both agree that the ksuvah was paid. The wife, he's not arguing the ksuvah was paid. He's arguing that she has another ksuvah. So if you're going to give her the document.
He wrote two, but what did he do? He gave them both to her?
If you're going to give her the document, she's going to collect two ksuvahs. He says, don't give her the document. I never paid her. He says, I never paid her. I owe her, but don't give her back this document. Because if you're going to give her back the document, she has two ksuvahs. These are a ksuvah that I wrote after she lost.
She says she lost one.
She lost it.
By law, he has to give her another one.
This was found. This was lost.
But then,
right, by law, he has to give her.
Now
you found this ksuvah that was lost. He doesn't claim, no. Don't give it back to her because I paid her already. No, I didn't. I did not pay her. I owe her. But don't give her back, please. Don't give her back this ksuvah because then she's going to have two ksuvahs in her pocket. She's going to collect twice. She can't collect.
She can go to two different courts.
She can go to different courts. Or when I die, she'll collect from me once. When I die, she'll go to collect from my children. Rabbi Yossi says, take ksuvahs like her. Rabbi Yossi is not worried. No, we don't. That's too far-fetched. No, you admit you didn't pay her. You give her the wife the document. That's why Rabbi Yossi says he give her the document. Why do you give her the document? Rabbi Yossi says that maybe it was paid up. Because even he admits he didn't pay. He never argued that it was paid. He just argued, don't give it back to Ksuba because she already has another Ksuba. He says, no, that Rabbi Yossi says, we don't believe it. You don't have to worry about it. Rabbi Lazar said, and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, if the lender and the borrower are holding on to the shtar, so you divide it, machlekes, you split it down the middle, he only pays half of the loan, only b'shneim adukim b'teifus, b'shneim b'teifus. There's two parts of the shtar. There's the standardized, and then there's the specifics, the details, the names, the times, the amount, and there's the standard text. It's equivalent in all loans, and then there's the details that specifies this particular loan.
The
tofus. Right, the tofus and the tofus. So they're both holding on to both parts of the shtar. One of them is holding on to the tofus, the standardized text, and one of them is holding on to the tofus with all the juicy information, the relevant information, the name, the specifics. Then you don't divide it equally. Whatever you grab is yours. Then little tofus and little tofus. Meaning, mother will explain. What do you mean? He takes the tayyid, he takes the tayyid. Either way, you split the loan down the middle, and you only have to pay half of the loan. Okay. So your mother explained. We learn the brayzas. Each one takes whatever he's grabbing onto is his. So why do you divide it? If he's holding the whole tayfus and he's holding the whole tayyid. What are you splitting down the middle? Let's each one take whatever he's holding onto. Well, it's richer the kateiruf bein mitzi. Rabbi Yechon is talking about the kateiruf is in the center. So they're holding onto the rest of the document. Understand the opinion of Rabbi Yechanan. Why does Rabbi Yechanan argue? Why does Rabbi Yechanan say you always divide down the middle? What do you mean? The Mishnah says clearly, whatever you're holding on to is yours. Whatever you're holding on to is yours. If he's holding the Teufis, it should be his. If he's holding the Teufis, it should be his. The Gemara says Rabbi Yechanan is talking about if the Teufis is in the center. And they're holding on to the rest of the Dakin. That's why you divide the whole Dakin. He's not coming to argue with Rabbi Elazar. He's talking about a different case. Rabbi Yechanan Omar is not an argument. He's not arguing what Rabbi Elazar says. He's talking about a different case. If they're both holding on to the Teufis, and the Teufis, no one is holding on to the Teufis, to the Teufis. And therefore, you split the loan down the middle. So what's he coming to teach me? Obviously, they divide it. That's the din in the Mishnah. That's the din. Like two people holding on to the document. What's he coming to teach me? Well, you don't need this. Only in the case... The Mekadav Lagabi the Chod. The Teitav is in the middle, but it's closer to one of them. Ma'otem, I would think, Shamalei Ploig Hachi, let's divide it into width. So I get the whole Teitav, and you get the nonsense, the standardized text, which means nothing, signifies nothing. I'll get the whole Teitav, which is the juicy part, the part that says the names and the loan and the amount. So therefore, I'll get all of that. And you can keep the piece of paper. Kamash Malon says, "Rabbi Yechanan says, no, I'm a lay. My chaz is a parga ha'ochi, play ha'ochi. Split it in the length. Who says split it down the middle? I'm a lay. Rabbi Achmed Div Ravina. Rabbi says, Rabbi Yitzchak said, Rabbi Ravina, Rabbi Lozor, Rabbi Lozor. I'm a zen. It's a teiriv. Lamehi. He says, this one, if this one's holding on to the teifus, this one's holding on to the teiriv. He gets the teifus and he gets the teiriv. Well, what's he going to do with the teifus? What's he going to do with the standard tax? It's meaningless." He needs a piece of paper to use as a stopper for his jar, for his canteen. I mean, what's he going to do with it? He needs it. He said, "Ledummy." Doesn't mean you cut it out and you give him that piece of paper. He says, we're talking about the financial. You split it financially. He says like this, Stara the Izbez Man Kamashavit. Let's make a shavit. In the Teufel, you have the time, the date. In the Teufel, I have that he made a loan, the amount, but it doesn't say any date. So what's the difference in value between a document that has a date or the document that doesn't have a date? What's the difference between the two? The shtar is man. It's like a mortgage. The government mishabli. The property becomes mortgage because there's a voice. People know about it, so you're able to collect. Even if he doesn't have any money, nothing to collect from, I can collect from his property. The idach, but a property that doesn't have a time. So maybe the loan happened today. You can't go and collect it, and maybe the person who bought your property bought it before the loan, so you can never collect. Your property is not mortgageable to pay this loan. So whatever the difference in value, it has some value because if he has money, then he can go and collect it from him with his document, even though it has no time. I'm holding on to the document. I lend you the money. You owe me money. I'm still holding on to the documents. So you would have to pay me. But it's worth less because it's not as enforceable. It's not mortgageable. Your property is not mortgageable to it. So that difference, the one who's holding on to the teufis, the standardized text, has to give to the one who's holding on to the teufis, that differentiation, and then the rest, that they split down the middle. But it concludes, the mission says you divide the cloak, you divide the two holding on to a document, the lender and the borrower. Or they're fighting over an animal. It also means the dummy. The money, you're not splitting it down the middle. I'm not going to cut the animal in half. You have this steak, I have that steak. Or, you know, you take this piece of half a paper. What's a half a paper? Half a document is worthless. You're ruining the garment. You're destroying it. I'm claiming it's my argument. The court is telling me to ruin it, to cut it in half. What am I going to do with half a suit? What am I going to do with half a dress, half a coat? It's worthless. So it must mean you sell it and you divide the money. The money says, holy kash, enough. And the mission is not a question. The chazi liktanim. Because you can still give it to children. if you cut the cloak in half, it's still, you can still use it as a garment for a child, half your size. Okay, to be continued. Let's to be continued. We'll see. We are on 8A. We'll be continued tomorrow. Have a wonderful.